Okay, today I'm on a Zoom call with Emmett Kennedy. Thanks very much for agreeing to talk to us, Emmett. Best known for, well, I'd say best known, maybe not, for the Final Furlong podcast. Been a huge success. What do you attribute it to?
Oh God, the incredible listenership and the incredible loyalty of that listenership, and I think the dynamic and the chemistry that I luckily have with my guests, which makes the show appealing. And also the fact that it's informative, but it's also entertaining. We're not a bunch of clowns. Well, I suppose we are. Well, I am anyway, to a certain extent. But I think that the show just, I think the show flows quite well. And yes, it can be quite long, but it's interesting when I shorten it, people complain. When I go long, overlong, people complain. The beauty of a podcast is, and that's one of the reasons I love it over radio, is that if Jane Mangan is making a very, very interesting point, I don't have to go, sorry, Jane, just we gotta cut to traffic. Pete, what's the latest? And that's commercial radio, so you can speak for as long as you want about whatever eloquent point it is that you're making, as long as you're making an eloquent point. But it's the audience, it's the listenership, which is just fantastic.
Yeah, that listenership, it sort of takes some working out really, because obviously you've got an awful lot of fans. They like the format, like you say, sometimes it could be 3 hours plus. You'd also have to be extremely interested in racing to tune in the first place. And most people that keen aren't. You see them on Twitter, they don't really want to know everybody else's opinion. So what you've got to find balance perfectly right there, haven't you?
Yes. Yes, Simon. Yes, we do. And hopefully we can keep it that way. I mean, when I started the Final Furlong podcast, God, it's probably 6 years ago now. There wasn't a show of that ilk at the time. So when I began the show, I was working commercial radio. I'd been working in commercial radio since I was 16. Very blessed to have been given the opportunities that I've been given so far in life, and continue to be given, thankfully. But I was listening to Football Weekly with James Richardson, who was on that show at the time, and Gabriel Marchetti and the Game podcast. And I thought it was really interesting that there were journalists talking about football, and I liked it, and I liked the dynamic that the presenters and the pundits had, and I liked the fact that it could break out into a row at any second, or just break into absolute hilarity at any second. So I went looking for a racing podcast, and there wasn't any. With the greatest respect to Simon Rowlands, because I know that Simon had a big hand in Timeform Radio, and Timeform Radio was great, but the podcasts that they were pushing out was the only thing that was available. But it was very much, well, Timeform have this horse rated at and such and such, and that's fine. And if you like that kind of thing, great. I use Timeform, but I also use Racing Post or PRs. I use the official ratings. I use as much data as I possibly can. I don't just stick to one thing. And so I decided to start a podcast that was like, the way I described it was, it's a show where you've just been at a Cheltenham preview night, but it's been a fairly high-end Cheltenham preview night, but now everyone's blathered. And you've taken your tie off, and you're in the pub afterwards, and the audience are there with you, and you're talking away about the sport, and the audience are listening along with you, and they can join in the conversation if they want. And obviously, our listeners can't just jump into the conversation, because that's not possible. Although I'm sure that many have shouted at the speaker over the years, going, "You clown, why would you say that?" So I think that it's the mixture of it being informative for one thing, the winners that have been tipped on the show, but it's not just about winners. It's about it being informative and entertaining, and then that blend of guests and pundits. Like Rory De Largy is just, Rory's first class. He's absolutely brilliant. Jane Mangan is the best Irish pundit I think that the racing has right now. And I think racing's in a very, very lucky place at the moment that it's got such talented people like Nick Luck and Ed Chamberlain and Lydia Hislop and Sean Boyce anchoring it, and Gary O'Brien, I should mention as well. But also some fantastic talent in terms of writing about the sport like Chris Cook and Lee Modisette, and brilliant pundits like Roy DeLargy and like Jane Mangan and Kay Tracy. Who should get a very strong mention as well, who's a firm member of the family now too. But we also do, or I should say that I also do, long form interviews with people like owners, trainers, jockeys, and I think they can be very well received as well. So racing does itself down an awful lot, and it's a huge sport, and it's got two dedicated TV channels. And it's got a multitude of bookmakers who want to take your money. And there's a lot of them who are doing quite well. So the sport's got fans. And, you know, we saw the pictures of Cheltenham, which were very unfairly, I think, used. We won't even go back to that during the Rona times. Back in the old days when we can all go outside and hold hands and hug and live life normally. And I think that I've managed to tap into that audience. And that's been the case it took a while to get there. But now that we're there, and there are a number of other racing podcasts, but now that we're there, I think we've managed to stabilize and try and stay there.
Now, you mentioned you were one of the first, if not the original racing podcast after Time for Radio. Was it originally done as like a financial proposition, or were you doing it because you loved it?
God knows, pure love of the game. I had no idea that this show would become a show that a site affiliated with Sky would want, and that now that the Tote would want to sponsor, and that big companies would want to advertise on now. I really didn't have any clue what I was doing, to be honest about it. I was a commercial music radio presenter and a massive horse racing fan, and had been a massive horse racing fan since I was a kid. My mother ran a bookmakers and ran several of them, and was on duty the day that Frankie had the Magnificent Seven. So I was quite young and barely enough to remember it, but I remember just her telling me about an old woman having a 10p Super Heinz on all of Frankie's minutes and taking the prices as well. And that my mother had told her, take the prices, you know, make sure you take the prices. Because back in those days, there was no best odds guaranteed. And anyway, you would have been screwed in the last race if you hadn't taken the 20-1 or 33-1, whatever price the Frankie's last winner was. But my late uncles, God rest them, and some of my uncles who are still very much around and kicking, like Jack and Brendan and Uncle Paddy, were interested in the sport as well. So I wasn't born into racing. I kind of fell into it, if you like, in that regard. I fell into it as a fan. For a brief period of time, I did get to do some show jumping, which meant that I got to learn the personalities of horses and learn that, oh, they're like any animal, almost like any human. They all have their own unique set of personalities. Some can be lovely and gentle, and some can be utter, insert colorful language. I wanted to talk about racing on my show. I was doing a sports show on a Sunday afternoon on 96FM. I was working 5 days a week for 96FM in Cork, doing 5 hours a day on air. So I was responsible for a lot of hours, 5 hours a day, 5 days a week. And then there was the prep work in between. And they pulled me aside one day and said, we don't want you talking about racing anymore. And I was like, what? Why? Cork has a race course. And don't know if you know this, but there's a big following of racing in Cork. And like every street you went onto, there was a betting shop. No, we don't want you talking about it. So listening to those podcasts, Football Weekly and the Game podcast, I decided, well, screw it. Maybe I could start my own show. And I looked into the logistics of what it would be like to start a podcast and what was involved in it. And some fairly tedious details to go through, but also assembling a team then to start the show with as well, and booking various different guests and being ballsy enough and brave enough to go and book trainers and ask them would they come on the show. And it started to work. And then eventually Horse Racing Ireland came along and they became a sponsor of the show. And that was for a few months. And then after that, it kind of went quiet for a bit. And all of a sudden, At the Races came out of nowhere and said, we quite like your show. And they flew over to Cork to meet up with me. And the rest is kind of history. You know, I think that the show's independent now and with the Tote. And with that, I have a greater sense of freedom to be able to go and say what I want. Like, Racing TV is a very good product, whereas I was kind of restricted from saying that previously. There's no doubt that being affiliated with ATR and such a gigantic site, and great people like Matthew Taylor, and working with great people like them, definitely helped boost the show. Because I think that once we were sponsored by ATR, that gave it credibility. And I remember to this day reading a tweet one night from Ed Chamberlain saying, listening to this on the way home from Sky Sports, it's absolutely brilliant. And I nearly fell off my chair. And he was talking about an episode that we'd done. I can't quite remember what the episode was. But he tweeted a number of times, and he was kind of restricted about what he could tweet because they wanted him just tweeting about football. But he was a big supporter of ours. And there were some others as well who promoted the show on social media too. And we wouldn't have had big followings back then. So getting ATR to sponsor the show gave it a credibility and gave it, I guess, a status to a certain extent as well. But I never for one second did I dream that the show would be what it is, what it's become. There was no grand plan. I didn't concoct some idea when I was, 6 years ago when I started the show that I'm going to, excellent. I'm going to build a podcast into being this, juggernaut of a thing. I just wanted to talk about racing. And it's maybe the fact that I'm a fan who wanted to talk about the sports is one of the reasons why it's popular, because people want to listen to a sport that they like.
Okay, you mentioned in the first part that it got to the point where you could say what you liked, and you come across a very genial, softly spoken Irish gentleman, but you do manage to garner some controversy. If you have, I always do a little bit of research. I mean, all you've got to do is put your name in on Twitter, and there's people that absolutely love you, and there's other people that aren't quite so polite. I mean, is that something that is it a professional thing that you've tried to create, or is it just, you know, that sort of controversial wolf in sheep's clothing sort of character? Or do you disagree?
No, I learned very early on. Like, so I started with Radio Kilkenny when I was 16 years of age. I joined Cork's 96 FM when I was 18. 96 FM at the time was one of the most commercially successful radio stations in the country. And at both radio stations, you would get texts from like burner phones saying you're a twat, or, you know, something more colorful. And I would really take it to heart, you know, because there'd be nice texts saying, oh, you know, great choice of music. Back in the days when in commercial music radio, you could actually choose the music you're playing on your show and not have it just picked for you, which I hate to break it to you, is exactly how it's done now. And there are some people out there who you just are never going to please and who are not going to like you. And to a certain extent, they're not going to like you for no logical reason. And I understand that because there's some presenters that I don't like. But I don't take to Twitter and say such and such is a insert colorful language. I'm not entirely sure what I can get away with saying on this illustrious show of yours, Simon. So I'm being on my best behavior so far.
We get the gist. We get the gist.
but don't worry. You could drop in. So I remember getting a message from a colleague of mine one day, and I realized actually that he was sending it to me to really attempt to upset me in the most possible way, which was another lesson about not everybody that you work with is your friend, and that just because you work with someone doesn't mean that you're friends with them. And it was there was a website called, and still is, the People's Republic of Cork, and somebody was going off on a rant about me that like I was a prat and a blow-in from Kilkenny and what the hell did I know and what was I doing on 96FM and this kind of stuff. And he was like, someone's saying some real nasty stuff about you there, bye. He doesn't talk like that, but he kind of does at times. And initially, you know, we didn't have smartphones to be able to go, who the hell is this? And initially I remember being crestfallen. And then I realized, who cares? It's just the opinion of somebody on the internet who I've never met and probably never will meet. And I've had this conversation with Clang name drop Nick Luck and Clang name drop Ed Chamberlain and Clang name drop Lydia Hislop. And in a way, I kind of admire Lydia's way of going about it, where she just tackles all of these trolls and eventually takes them apart piece by piece. I just hit the block button, and Nick has shown me the abuse that he's been sent, and Ed's shown me the abuse that he's been sent, and it's there. It's an element of social media. There's a young girl called Samantha who's 16 years of age and is writing about racing, and she's entered the Racing TV Tipstar competition, and my good friend Andrew Halligan from the Finishing Line podcast used colorful language to call out all of those who were having a go at her. And I was trying to find the tweets that were abusing her, and I realized that I'd blocked the people who were abusing her, so I couldn't see them.
Judge.
But I could see a few of them, and I thought it was shameful that, you know, here's a 16-year-old girl. What does racing need? It needs young blood. We need young people coming through who are engaged and are interested in the show. And here's this seemingly lovely young person who is very knowledgeable about the game, and you could probably sit alongside anybody right now and she'd hold her own. And just because she puts up a threes on shot, she gets targeted for abuse online. So everybody gets it. The thing is that there are days where you can look at abuse like that and just go, yeah, and you're blocked forever, and that's that, and move on. And there's other days where you could read 10 nice things said about the show and one negative comment that's directed at you, and it will eat away at you. And I know what that person wants. What that person wants is they want to do that to you. They want you to feel that. They want you to really feel the pain that they want to inflict on you with their words. And I've never wanted to do that. So I'm not entirely sure what the psychology is behind it. Is it that you truly despise the person and you cannot stand them so much that you must take to social media and you must voice your discontent from a faceless account? Or is it that you're actually hurting yourself and you go through some of these people's tweets and you see that they're having a go at multiple people? There are days where it can get to you, and there are days where it can hit and punch you in the stomach. But for the most part, because I've been in broadcasting for so long and was introduced to it at such a young age, and I was bullied in school as well, I just think it's the internet. I don't really care, and I don't have time for your headspace nonsense. So block, move on.
One of the things that is very harmful, or can be very harmful, about the internet, and especially Twitter, social media, is when people put stuff out there as fact, which other people read as fact, that's actually baseless. I mean, you recently, all sorts of accusations about why various sponsors left you because of various reasons that were just put out there as fact by people. How did you deal with something like that, which could have, in the worst case scenario, totally ruined everything you built up in all that time?
Yeah, I thought that at the time, actually. I think the answer to that is best answered by a tweet that was sent to me today. Somebody was saying, well, how do you answer the fact that, you know, I've seen these accusations, but I haven't seen any proof? Yeah, exactly, because there isn't any, because you can't do that. If you, like, we were number 7 on Apple Podcasts over the weekend, which is an enormous achievement for a horse racing show in the middle of the Premier League season. And there's only one reason that that's happened, and that's because of the fan base that we have. If you, to the best of my knowledge, if you attempt to try to manipulate numbers, you will get thrown off of Apple, for one. But you'll also get thrown off of the sites themselves, like the site that hosts you. And I think what gave me heart during all of this was, and again, it was like, go and say whatever you want. You know, you're anonymous clowns. 3 podcast agencies. Look, business is business. Like, the split from ATR is business. It nearly happened in 2019. And I'm not going to speak disparagingly about a company that I worked with for such a long time, particularly when I have so much respect for Matthew Taylor. And I have a lot of respect for a lot of the people that work there, but not all of them. And I think that the Irish rights going was the beginning of the end. It wasn't necessarily, in that it was in their mind that they very much wanted to continue the Final Furlong, with their association with it. But we talk a lot about Irish racing now. We also probably, if you actually really think about it, we probably talk more about UK racing, to be quite honest about it. But the fact that 3 podcast agencies, when I put it out there that I was interested in going solo, and I've spoken to Ronan McManamy, who's the man who hired me at 96FM, who is one of the people I respect most in this world, and he's a big fan of racing as well. And one of the things that I like about Ronan is that he won't just say what you want to hear. He will call you on it straight away. If he thinks that something's wrong, or if he thinks that you're doing something wrong, he'll tell you, hey, that was shit. Here's how to do it better. Brian Purcell, who is a marketing genius, John O'Sullivan, who's a very good friend of mine. Brian's a good friend of mine as well, I should say. John O'Sullivan, who's been salesman of the year. He's a medical rep now, but he worked in media. We worked together at 96FM. He knows how to sell. He's been salesman of the year 3 times in Ireland for the medical rep company that he works for. And he's given me some great advice. But also Niamh, who's a producer and a director. And when I put it out there to tender, 3 podcast agencies wanted it. And fair play, Acast realized, I know what you're doing. You've been advised by someone to try and figure out how best to sell the show yourself. And while you're not going to undercut me, you know, I'm not going to, you know, unless you want to sign a deal now, we're not going to keep doing this. God bless you, by the way. And fair play to Jennifer. She copped on very quickly, but the Podbean wanted to host the site, host the show on their platform. And Adlicious and a lovely guy called Craig, who I probably will still do business with. Adlicious are an arm of, they're the marketing arm in the UK of Megaphone, who have been bought by Spotify for something like $280 million. Willing to be corrected on that. And he was interested and is interested in working with me on selling advertising on the show. But out of nowhere, the Tote came along, and they came along to me directly. And they wouldn't be interested in the show if they didn't know the numbers, and they've seen them. They wouldn't be interested in the show if they haven't seen the actual audience breakdown. And you don't chart on Apple Podcasts by doing anything malicious. So for a brief period of time, for a brief, like, few hours, I was freaking out. But I also then did realize that actually what was going on was I was trying to be goaded into a Twitter war. And I wasn't gonna give that individual that thing. And that same individual drove my friend Roy DeLargy off of Twitter. So I mean, he'd start a fight with his own shadow. So I'm not getting dragged into stuff like that. My show is my show. You know, I created it, but it's really the listener's show. And it's only popular because they listen, and we have an incredible audience because we have fantastic guests. And this week we just had the show that's just done is with Mark Howard and Matt Toombs and Jamie Benson. And it's a fascinating breakdown of the weekend. The show prior to that was Gordon Elliott, Patrick Mullins, and Barry Geraghty. You don't get people like that on your show, and you don't get asked to do shows like that unless you're doing a legit job. So, no, people will always have something that they want to say, and people will always have some conspiracy theory, and that's fine. But I don't spend my time going around abusing people on social media, and wouldn't ask. I'm not going to respond to that kind of stuff myself.
Okay, Amit. Now, you mentioned earlier about getting good advice from Brian, etc. But your mum generally gives you the best advice, is what you told me. What's the best advice she's ever given you?
Oh, God. I don't know, but it was probably something very profound. To your own thine self be true. And I remember Mam said that to me when I was a teenager. So I was probably lying about having been out the night before and having consumed large quantities of alcohol at the age of 16. And to thine own self be true. And I do try and stick to that as best as I can, but also I'm an only child, and without going down a rabbit hole of a very long story, I had a horrible, horrible childhood. But it's a strange thing to say when your follow-up comment is, I'm blessed that I have an incredible mother. I think I'm very lucky that I'm an only child, because I don't know how Mam would have handle things if it was two of us or three of us, or God forbid four of us that Mam was trying to raise. But my father was a very powerful individual. He was a principal of a primary school, and that was 15 to 20 kilometers away from my home. So it didn't make any sense for me to go there as a student. It would make far more sense for me to be going there as a pupil to my local school. But no, I had to go to his school because it wouldn't look right for him if his son wasn't going to his school. And of course, as the son of the principal, I was bullied left, right, and center. But he... it was one day Gary O'Dowd and myself, and I meet Gary now on a regular basis. And I think that Gary still remembers the day that my father grabbed, would have been the old, very heavy tables that we had in school. And Gary had made a sarcastic comment and I laughed. And this is sixth class. So we're maybe 12. Maybe probably 11, and he grabs the bar underneath the table and throws the table on top of both of us, and then makes us go and stand outside because it's our fault. And Liam Lawler actually said it to me not so long ago. Another former people of mine, Gary and Liam were always very nice to me. They were the ones who kind of looked out for me in a way. If I was the runt of the litter, I was asthmatic. I was not very good at sports. But they were always really sound and they were always really, really good to me. And they would have been a year ahead of me. So I would have been in fifth class and they would have been in sixth class. That's how it would have been. And Liam had made some comment, some hilarious schoolboy comment as my father Brian was speaking, and he made him stand up, and Liam made another sarcastic comment that made us all burst out laughing, and my father's reaction was to pick up a chair which was plastic but had four metal legs and just fling it at him full force, and he just managed to duck. He said he could actually feel it go over him. He could feel the force of it go over his head. He just managed to duck in time. And I still remember it taking a chunk out of the wall. And that was him. He was an incredibly violent, volatile, vicious, aggressive, you know, nice street angel house devil. And remarkably, he went from that to being special advisor to the Minister for Sport, State, Youth and Education. And it was there where things really, really kicked off. He was caught over the legal limit for alcohol. He was five times over the limit, got away with it, didn't even go to court, kept his license, just quietly buried by the government. And he was being incredibly abusive towards my mother and I one night, and I locked myself in my room, and my mother had to knock the door to come in, and he'd been physically violent with her as well. And I was crying profusely, and Mam said, "No more, no more." And it was 90s Ireland, and you don't separate in 90s Ireland. Like I'm friends with people whose parents, you know, stay together, but they're not in love, and they're not even happy to be together. But that's how 90s Ireland was. And for my mother to stand up to a man of his stature who would be seen by the community as, oh, you know, he's the principal of a school, so he's obviously a, you know, an upstanding citizen, and then he's a special advisor to a senior minister in government. Well, obviously he's a fantastic upstanding member of society, when in actual fact he's a bastard of the highest order. And the only reason that I actually kept the Kennedy name is that I'm too young to appreciate my granddad Jim, but I know stories of him. My granddad was a very, very good and very kind man, but he was also a very smart man, because I learned this in later life. He learned that he was going to pass away, and in whatever way he did it, he tied up his own house, his home in Kilkenny City. He tied it up in legal ends that it could not be sold under any circumstances until his wife, my father's mother, my granny, passed away, because he knew that's what Brian would have done. And he would have. He would have done that. He was that kind of person. He was an alcoholic. He had an affair. He squandered money. I mean, the man rented a television for 20 years. Who rents a TV for 20 years? And it was a 14-inch Mitsubishi as well. It wasn't even a good one. He never... like I would go to my friend's house, like Donal and Bobo and their fathers, God rest them, Donal and Eamon would come out and play football with us. And this was completely alien to me, because Brian never did that with me. So my mother is a hero to me, because she stood up to him. And she stood up to him in the strong. And we talked about a bully off air, actually. I made a run for him when I was 13. So like he would have had a fair lot of strength on me. And I'm not exactly physically imposing as it is now. He hid behind a door. He was terrified that I was going to connect with him. And I mean, what would I have done? Like, it probably would have been like an A4 paper blowing in the wind. But that's the kind of person he was. He was a bully. And my mother stood up to him. But the problem was that because he controlled the money, my mother needed legal aid. And I kid you not, this is an absolute fact. And it's such a fact that a journalist in the Irish Times wants to write about it. And it's just a matter of whether or not I want all of those gritty details going out there. I mean, I'm pouring out enough as it is, but if to go into the real details and name certain politicians who are still in the game as well, as one be it. But he manipulated the legal aid. And I know that as well, because the case just happened to come up. There was a circumstance that happened, and my mother is a very, she's much cleverer with money than I am, and she's got a great mind for mathematics, which I do not. My uncles don't either, by the way. And she has a fantastic filing system, and she kept the entire records of the entire legal records. And through a series of circumstances, I was speaking to a friend about the fact that this case was going to be on, and I had booked the day off work because I wasn't going to have my mother see my father for the first time in 20 years on her own. And it was a guard that I was talking to. It was they wanted, on guard the Shiokana wanted me to host a road safety event, which I ended up doing for the next 3 years afterwards as a kind of, I suppose, as a thank you. And he knew the backstory, and he said, "Do you have a solicitor?" And I went, "No, we've spoken to the clerk of the court clerk. There's not one isn't required." And he said, "You're only going to get one shot at him. Take it." So I got some advice, and very kindly was given pro bono, one of the top solicitors in Cork, one of the top solicitors in the country. And he read over the files for about 3 days, and he called me into his office with his team, and he called me into the boardroom, and he extended his hand, and he said, "On behalf of the Law Society of Ireland, I want to apologize to you and your mother profusely for what you went through. In my 25 years of family law, I have never, ever seen a case this bad, but your father is going to get his comeuppance now." And he did. and I got special permission to be in the courtroom, and to see him eviscerated by a judge was quite a pleasant sight. So my mother ended up working four jobs because he wasn't paying the maintenance that he was supposed to pay, and the maintenance that he was court ordered to pay was bloody pittance anyway. And one of those was, she had already been running a bookmaking site. There were no bookmaking sites back then, a bookmaker's part-time. But she now had to go back and do that full-time. And she was doing some other jobs as well, like parish secretary and different things like that. And first of all, I don't know where she got the strength to do all of those jobs to put the food on our plates. But secondly, she then had to have the strength to go and face him in court with his smug smile, having the whole game rigged. And she did that. And she ensured that I never wanted for anything. We didn't have the best of everything, but I never wanted for, I was never hungry. I never went to school without the right uniform. You know, Mam made sure that everything was done right, and she put me first every single time. Like, you know, she sacrificed. Mam wasn't going off on holidays. Mam wasn't going off. Mam didn't go to the pub. The thing that my mother loves to do is play bridge, and she's a brilliant bridge player. She's a fantastic bridge player, and right now, thankfully, she can play it online. So in 2018, when you come back from the UK, and something tells you, don't stay in Cork. Go home. And Mam, being so nice, is asking me, you know, what was Goodwood like? And you're like, I was this and it was that, and Matt Chapman's impossible to work with, and blah blah blah, and you're telling all the different stories, and you know, you obviously saying, and how are you? And she tells me she has cancer. And for 10 years, I was very lucky to be part of a broadcast with 96FM called the 96FM Giving for Living Radiothon. And the first 3 years was for pediatrics, but the 7 years after that was for cancer. And I pretty much know every statistic that there is in cancer, and breast cancer is the most common form of cancer in females. Testicular cancer, the most common form of cancer in men. And thank God, I just hugged her straight away and said, it's the most common form of cancer. I think it's a 91% survival rate, and we'll beat it. This just broke me down. I think it just pulled me apart. And for my mother, I had to put on this face that, you know, everything was fine and that everything was okay. And I also had to keep working and remember the fact that while I shared the story, I shared the story in an interview with Pat Smullen, of all people, who is incredibly brave and incredibly open in what he had to say. And he could not have been nicer. And he would text me. Like, I didn't know Pat. But Pat would message me. And Frances, his wife, would message me and see how is my mother doing. And listeners to the show who've never met me would do the same. And I firmly believe that you know, putting that out into the ether and the people praying for my mother, and I am... While I have certain issues with religious organization, I am a Catholic, and I don't go to church every weekend, but I do very much believe in God. I'm blessed to have been given the opportunities that I've been given, but I'm also blessed to have the mother that I have, and I'm blessed that she has the strength to have beaten cancer and to have recovered from it. And don't get me wrong, she, you know, every now and again, she needs a nap. And that's fine. I have chronic back pain. Every now and again, I need a nap. I may need one after this show. But bringing her down to Waterford last year and getting to see her ring the bell that she'd beaten it was one of the happiest sights that I've ever seen. But to go down to the specialists last month and be told you're only going to need to be checked out once a year is remarkable. And I will say it straight now. I don't have that strength. I wouldn't have the mental fortitude to fight off somebody that I loved and was with for 25 years. And I wouldn't have the mental fortitude to deal with cancer in the way that my mother so brilliantly did. And she's a rock star. She's an absolute hero. And she is somebody who she's so kind. You know, it's always about everybody else. It's never about my mother. You know, it's never about where my mother's going to go on holidays. It's about what she can do for her friends. And she might be in agony, but it's still about what she can do for other people and what she can do for me. And I'm blessed that before lockdown happened, I came home, because I would be freaking out if I hadn't. And I'm very, very lucky that I have a recording studio here in FFP Towers, which is great. But no, my mother is without doubt my hero. I'm very, very blessed to have her.
But there, you've done yourself down a bit there, haven't you? Because you said that you haven't got the strength to carry on. But in 2018, you were working Cheltenham Main Tree, Epsom Royal Ascot, Goodwood, and then your poor mum became poorly. So you basically put your career on hold until she's got better, which she has, and now you're bouncing back. So you obviously do have the you have the strength to do it. Now, you've got some opinions on racing that you wanted to share, specifically how technology is developing so fast and the people in charge don't really realize it.
Yeah. So technology continues to evolve, and it's evolving at a rapid rate. And the only thing that TV and radio have in their advantage is live. And who's to say that when the racing rights come up in 4 years' time, that it's not going to be Eurosport that come along and put in the bid? Who's to say that it's not going to be racing TV that go, right, let's go for it, and let's become a full-blown, we're the dog's bollocks of racing. And why not? They have two EPGs. They have two channels, because we know that, because they had a dedicated Irish channel for Christmas last year, which I assume that they will use again this year. The only reason they don't use it fully for customers who would complain about that is because it costs a bloody fortune to run it. So I think that the fact that you and I can have this conversation and that it can be broadcast, that's a rival to television. Most of the interviews that you do with other people are far more interesting than the ones than you're doing with me. Podcasts, if I had said to you 20 years ago, hey, do you want to come on my show? What is it? It's a show that you listen to on your phone. You'd be calling the men in white coats. And podcasts have become so valuable that Spotify are buying up everything.
What's going to happen with you? What is the future as you envisage it with you and racing? Because you were first off the blocks pretty much with the podcast of Final Furlong. Have you already seen what's next? Have you got your eye on something to progress from podcasts now that everybody's doing it?
I don't necessarily think that there needs to be a progression from podcasts. I do wonder about video content and whether or not that's something that we're going to have to start doing, that we may have to look at that a little bit more. But then again, I look at other research that says people like the balance between video and audio. No, I have not. I don't have a Tesseract where I can move through time, or however that worked in the Marvel films. I don't have the Time Stone, and I don't have the Tesseract that allows me to just move through space. So I can't tell you exactly how all of this is going to play out. But COVID sped all this up because COVID locked us down. And because we couldn't do anything, if you didn't embrace podcasts beforehand, when Nick Luck enters the podcast market, you probably embraced it then because he's such a bloody brilliant broadcaster that you'll go, well, God, if he's doing a podcast, maybe they're worth listening to. And it's not through planning, but if you listen to the Final Furlong podcast and you go down to similar shows, it comes up Nick Luck Daily. If you listen to the Nick Luck Daily podcast, it comes up similar shows, the Final Furlong podcast. I don't know why that is, and neither does Nick. It's not some concoction that we've come up with, some evil plan that we've come up with, but that's how that plays out. So people have probably embraced podcasts and audiobooks far more. And in America, the Kentucky Derby was the highest rated sporting event since the Super Bowl. But there's a slight downside to that. It had half the amount of people watching it than the previous year. And I think what's happened is that, you know, the NBA, like Disney, spent an absolute fortune on building that bubble in Disneyland so that they could get the NBA back on. And the ratings weren't there. People didn't tune in. And I don't think it was, some people make out that it was to do with the political movement. I don't think it was. I think it was that people realized, geez, these shows are great. And there's a lot of content that I can watch. And maybe there's more to life. And it's the diehard NBA fans that then come out and go, yeah, go Celtics. And that's why I think we're very lucky with racing that it got to continue during lockdown. I think it was incredibly important that it did, first of all, for the industry, but secondly, for the people involved in it. And just a brief shout out to the BHA and, to be fair, to Godolphin as well, who sponsored it, the Stud and Stable Staff Awards. I promoted the crap out of that on the Final Furlong as much as I could, because how difficult must it be to be a groom or a member of a stud or a stable when it was lockdown and there was no racing? How difficult is it to be a trainer? I know, because I've spoken to them. And you've got owners who are saying, nah, I don't know. I don't think we're going to race this year. I think Nick Luck quoted 1,800 horses out of training on the flat this year that are fit and ready to race out of training because the prize money wasn't good enough. So just a brief recognition for them and all the incredible work that they do. But we're very, very lucky that our sport got to continue because it meant that all racing fans could keep watching the sport. However, it'll be interesting to see what the Premier League ratings are like. Are they as big as they once were? And is it as valuable as it once was? Is the Champions League ratings going to be good? So I don't have a crystal ball. I cannot tell you the direction that this is all going to go in. But I can tell you that don't be surprised that if in 4 years' time, and this is no insult to ITV and the team, that it's actually a streaming service like Netflix or Amazon that acquires the rights to horse racing, or that it's Eurosport or something like that. We don't know, because nobody would have predicted that the world would be almost on the brink of AI and that we would be instructing our phones to play our favorite songs and that we could listen to some of our favorite personalities on podcasts, or that you and I, Simon, could be doing a show like this. So the world is heading in a very, very exciting place in my mind.
And it'll be hopefully somebody will be watching this and have the answer in a few years' time. But it's been wonderful talking to you, Amit. Thank you ever so much, especially for being so candid with us. So, Amit Kennedy, thank you very much.
Simon, it's been my absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Follow our top sporting brand ambassadors, Davy Russell, Sylvester D'Souza, and Ryan Sidebottom for their exclusive news, views, and tips on all the major events with blogs and vlogs at starsportsbet.co.uk. BeGambleAware.org. Over 18 only.